Welcome to Tee Talk, the golf podcast brought to you by flagstaff.com. My name is Stephen Tuer. Sitting across from me is my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this week, man?
I'm doing all right. Other than the snow and the cold weather and the freezing rain, I'm doing all right.
Spring seems a long time away from us right now, but hey, we'll get there, right?
We're going to get there. Nick, our producer here, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm great. I got my night coffee. It's not snowing anymore. I'm not shoveling the driveway.
Night coffee with a side of beer?
Maybe a little later.
A little later, we'll get to that. We are here to talk some golf, and let's go right into it. Last week, we just had the AT&T Pro-Am out at Pebble Beach, with Phil Mickelson winning the tournament, his 44th career victory, five times winning this tournament, defeating Paul, as I call him, Popeye Casey.
I got a good Paul Casey photo for you, by the way.
Is it just his forearms?
Pretty much.
This guy's massive.
He's actually, so it's at Nike, and I actually did an interview with him, and I couldn't use it for a podcast because he dropped so many F-bombs. Like, it would have been just bleep, like 70% of it, right? Because he was just, everybody's having some pops, and we're at the campus. And then what they had was, it was the introduction of the resin ball, and they had the core, right? Mm-hmm. And they had a monster core, and it's up on the ceiling. And I'm like, I'm thinking of this photo of Atlas holding it up, right? So I'm like, would you come over here and do a photo for me? He's like, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to pretend like you're holding up the ball up into the ceiling. He's like, yeah, I'll do that. He did it.
So the guy just seems like such a beauty.
He's awesome. So I'll have to get you a copy of that. It's pretty funny. It's
Please
probably
do.
One of the funniest
I'll
photos
p-
I've ever
I'll put it on my ceiling.
Yeah, it's probably one of the funniest photos I've ever seen in my life. So,
Scotty, did you watch the tournament? What was your take after the event?
I caught a little bit of it, especially on Sunday there. I mean, and then Monday, I guess, the Monday finish. I probably watched more of that in the old 37 minutes I think it took to finish up the event. And nice to see Phil win. I mean, being a guy who's, you know, close in my age, it's nice to see. So not too bad that way. You know, the normal tired of the celebrity type thing is out there. You know, I'm not a big fan, so I don't watch that on the Saturday when a lot of the celebrities are playing or whatever. But, you know, always love to see that golf course early in the year. It's great to see. And it's always nice to have a player like Phil in the mix there. And obviously, you know, amazing career at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, so he's 48 years old, picks up, as I mentioned earlier, his 44th win. 44th. Yeah, that sounds right. Cool. 500 career cuts. I hate this tournament, Scott. I watched a little bit of it. I'm not going to lie. I can't stand this tournament. I can't stand watching. I love Bill Murray. Everyone loves Bill Murray. He's a national treasure. But this tournament is just, it's horrible to watch. It's you know, if you're sitting down to watch Phil in the final round, you pretty much have to dedicate 6.5 hours of TV time just watching the round. And that, it's just painful to me from start to finish, just the jokes going on. The other guys are all right, but I can't watch this tournament anymore.
At least we didn't have any rules infractions this week, so we didn't have a lot of that to talk about, which was okay. So that made the 6.5 hours go a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah, no issues with the rules this week. Another guy in the field that got a lot of buzz going into the week was my boy Ho Sung Choi. Did I get the name right?
You got it right finally. That's all good.
If you haven't seen Ho Sung Choi's swing, he's the crazy man out there on Instagram that you've probably checked out. And there was a lot of buzz going into the tournament about him getting an invitation to the tournament. Rory McIlroy would have been one that really was against the tournament. For me, I didn't really care at the end of the day. As I mentioned, the tournament's more about entertainment anyways. And to have a guy like him out there in the field, there's no harm to me. What is your take on him getting an invitation?
Yeah, I had no issues with it. I mean, he ended up missing the cut. I had a poll out there on Twitter, and I think 60% of the people said he'd miss the cut. Obviously, they were right. You know, he's 194th player in the world. It's not like he's a terrible player. There was a few people critical. They thought they maybe caught some video of him on the range just kind of swinging what they would say is normal, and they think maybe he's just doing it as an act on the golf course.
Hmm.
But, you know, whatever the case is, like you said, anything to spice up that march around Pebble Beach. I mean, great backdrop, but, you know, trying to watch all the celebrities and stuff and do the same stuff over and over again is just a little bit tiring.
I mean, as a PGA professional, you've probably broken down the swing. If you actually break it down from frame to frame, is it really as bad as it looks
No, not really. I mean, if you look at the meat of the golf swing, I mean, really, you know, from start to kind of through impact, perfectly fine. There's nothing really unusual about that as far as his motion is concerned. But I think he just gets a little theatrical at the end. And you could see it when he had some putts. There's a video of him putting on 7 where he's kind of, you know, all ramped up with a putt that ended up just short as well. And you know what? If that's just your body language while you're out there, I mean, you know, fine. There's no harm in it. And hey, if the average spectator really finds it entertaining, then, you know, no harm, no foul.
Speaking of golf swings, we'll step back to Phil. One of the quotes that stood out for me on the weekend is he said, overnight he picked up 6 miles per hour on his golf swing. Again, you're the coach. Is this possible for a 48-year-old to go to bed and pick up 6 miles per hour in his golf swing?
I mean, maybe he was lacking the 6 miles an hour beforehand. That's and fair. He just kind of came back to his normal swing. You know, some things can happen in a swing where your timing has changed as far as how you're moving pressure in your feet that, you know, makes a difference as far as how much speed that you can create. But for him to, you know, note 6 miles an hour was kind of unusual. So, yeah, it's just Phil being Phil.
I mean, the best part for Phil, though, his driving has been actually really great this year. I believe in the first round of the tournament, he didn't miss a fairway. Is that correct?
I'm not sure on that one, but he certainly missed a few fairways after that.
Well, yeah. He is, as I mentioned, he's 48 years old. He's averaging 316 yards off the tee. That's an impressive stat. He's currently 5th in driving distance this year. It's obviously early. He's looking good. Obviously, had a few couple years there without a win, and last year he picked up a win, and now he's got another win here, and I guess you can call it a win when he beat Tiger in that silly little match play event. What are you expecting out of Phil this year?
I expect it to continue as long as he feels good about himself as far as healthy. You know, he obviously struggles a little bit with some arthritis. If he stays healthy that way, sure. You know what? He's going to play as much as he's going to play. You know, maybe 20 events in his schedule, not really a ton, but getting into the majors is obviously important for him. And, you know, he's going to really enjoy coming back here to Pebble Beach later on this year. And hopefully he can do the Hogan double, which Ben Hogan did at Riviera in 1948 when he actually won the LA Open at Riviera and then came back and won the US Open later on that same year.
Yeah, he's got to be licking his chops. This is one that he can't let get away from him. It's the one that means the most to him, the U.S. Open, the one he obviously doesn't have. We're not going to get too far into that, as that's just a lot of dumb decisions over the years. But if there's one that I think he's got, if he keeps this up, he's going to be a favorite going into that week. There was another winner this week on the web.com tour, Canadian. Why don't you tell us about this, Scotty?
Yeah, Michael Gligic, who originally is from Burlington, Ontario, lives in Kitchener now. And he picked up his first win at the Panama Championship, which is the Club de Golf de Panama, which I actually got to visit last year. And it is a very difficult golf course. I mean, he shot 8 under to win the championship. And he was one of only 2 players with all 4 rounds, even par or under for the week. So that was pretty impressive. And for him as well, you know, he's 29 years old. He's been a pro for 12 years. He turned pro when he was 19. And this is a big, big win for him because really it puts him in the driver's seat now to get his PGA Tour card for 2020, having won $112,000 for that event, $112,500. And you know what? Very much we could see him on the PGA Tour come this fall when the 2020 wraparound season begins.
I hadn't heard of Michael going in too much going into this tournament. Obviously picks up a big win, which is nice. Anytime we can get more Canadians out on the PGA Tour, we're going to be cheering for that. Never heard his story, though. You said he turned pro at 19. That's pretty rare. The only other one that I recalled, at least in Canada, doing that is Austin Connolly. I believe he's a dual citizen, though, correct?
Yeah, his family's got roots in Nova Scotia. Grew up mostly in Texas. He played on the national team. He was part of the national team program. And his actual he actually turned pro. His first event was here in Eastern Ontario at Loyalist Country Club. And I remember standing there on the 10th tee, actually taking his photo as he teed off. And doesn't hit a long way, but he's played pretty well on the European Tour. He did certainly get some TV time at the Open Championship last year. And then, you know, he's back on the European Tour as well now and playing. So, you know, it doesn't always work for everyone. Turning pro at 19 is certainly a little bit of a risk. But if you have a lot of confidence in yourself, and both those players do, you know, it might work out eventually.
So he picks up a win, though. What are his chances of getting onto the PGA Tour next year?
Pretty good, actually. I mean, if you look at it, for anybody that actually gets a win, generally almost all of them are pretty much guaranteed a spot in that top 25 where they're going to advance to the PGA Tour the very next year, especially for him getting this win early. He doesn't have a lot more money to really earn to be able to get that status for next year. So odds are pretty good, and I think we'll definitely see him playing on the PGA Tour in 2020.
Awesome. Let's switch it over to the ladies game a little bit here. The ladies have started their season off second week in a row. They're down in Australia. Where are they at this week, Scotty?
They're playing the Australian Open, so they're in Adelaide coming up. And we've got four of the Canadians in the field this week. We've got Jacqueline Lee. We've got Elena Sharp, Brittany Marchand, and AC Tanguay as well. Unfortunately, Brooke Henderson is still out. She'll still claiming some illness, and that's the second week in a row, but we'd expect to see her back in the field for the LPGA events coming up in Asia pretty soon.
Obviously, we're thinking about Brooke. Hopefully she gets better, and we wish her the best of health. She's obviously a friend of yours, Scotty, so we want to see her out in the field as soon as possible. We do have somebody we are cheering for in the field this week in Australia. Ryan O'Toole is out on her first tournament. Why are we talking about Ryan O'Toole? Well, our good buddy, Ryan DeVoe, is her caddy. And we are lucky to catch up with Ryan before he headed over to Australia for our first interview on Tee Talk. So why don't we send it over to Ryan right now? Our first guest on the podcast, we have local legend to the Kingston area and LPGA caddy Ryan DeVoe. How's it going, buddy?
It's going great. That was a very nice intro that I'm not sure I deserved, but yeah,
local
it's cool
legend
to be here. Yeah, I mean, maybe in the Napanee area, but not so much in the Kingston area, but very happy to be here.
We'll take it. And why don't you introduce yourself? You're on the bag for Ryan O'Toole. You did that last year.
Yeah.
How did that end up happening? And why don't you go through your career leading up to stepping on her bag full time?
Yeah. Well, obviously, no one, if you were to ask a lot of the guys and girls on the LPGA or caddy or PGA, no one really aspires to be in the position we're in. Not that it's one we don't all love once we're in it. You know, no one really wants to be a sidekick. I was a good player. Good, modest, good growing up on the junior circuit. And once I got to maybe 17 or 18 years old, realized that wasn't going to be something that I could achieve at a super high level. So it started a very close friend of mine, Brad Boyle from the area, very exceptional player, decided to get his card on the Canadian Tour maybe, I would say, 5 years ago. That went well. And I went out with him for the very first season on the Canadian Tour, and basically just to help him if I could. Didn't really know what I was doing. Thought it'd be a cool way to travel and see the whole of the country. And after about a year or two, he got injured. So that was going to be it for me. That was the only real reason I was in it. I have a friend of mine who I went to college with. He is now caddying on the PGA Tour. Asked me if I could do him a favor at a Canadian Women's Open. Caddied for one player. Was leaving in the parking lot, got asked to do the next 2 weeks, then the next three, finished that season out. Then now, I guess 4 years ago, a real local legend, not like myself, Augusta James, began on the Symetra Tour, and I was fortunate enough to work with her. And that's really where I thought that this would be something I'd be interested in doing for a job, just watching her work every day and the caliber of play and of focus that she had. It was really cool to see firsthand. And then basically from there, had three or four other serious jobs in the LPGA, probably worked for close to 15 players before Ryan. But yeah, found my way onto Ryan's bag. Just actually, it was a pretty crazy scenario. She needed a caddy for 1 week as a fill-in. I was working for a Canadian player who had been injured and was going to come back the week after. Filled in for Ryan at Green Bay. She played well, and I don't know what happened, if she contacted the player I was working for or what went down, but ended up getting the okay to work for Ryan, and I've been with her ever since.
How hard is it for you to kind of, or for anyone, to sort of get into the culture that's out there? I mean, obviously the caddies are, you know, they're really close out there. You know, you come in as an outsider. How soon is it before you kind of feel comfortable or you are accepted out there?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I feel like this took some time to learn. But there are certain cliques with caddies and players on tour where, you know, whether it be the young guys or the guys who appreciate how hard everyone's working, the lifers, the new guys, it does take a certain amount of time to, in two senses, one, be respected that you're out there not just for a field trip and you're out there to work, and two, to, you know, just gain a reputation that you're a good worker that leads to good results with the player. There's lots of good caddies who aren't fortunate enough to have the greatest players, and, you know, once you're lucky enough to get that break where you mesh with a player well enough who has the game to play well, that earns you some respect. But I think just coming to the golf course every day, working really hard, gains you that respect. And but to answer your question in like a timeline sense, I would say it probably took me probably till my second year to feel myself that I belonged. I was getting advice maybe 5 or 6 tournaments in from caddies who had won lots of tournaments and were well-respected and you would know to see on TV. But for me to really feel like I belonged, I would say that it probably took about a year.
Is that because you had to sort of find your way in the skills that you had to develop, or is it just from a culture standpoint as far as players and, you know, the players and the other caddies kind of like the look of you and like to talk to you and things like that and respected you? Or did you just feel I needed more skills to really
accept? Yeah, I would say that the more that I got into it, the more that I realized that even the best caddies on the tour, the, you know, for one example, Terry McNamara, he caddies for Carlos Sagana now, caddy for Annika forever, you know, has probably 80 or 90, maybe 100 wins. I may be underselling him.
That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, not
decent.
A big deal.
Only?
Terry McNamara.
That's it? Well, okay.
Yeah, just 100 wins.
Wait till you hear my credentials. I was going to ask you, so I don't know if you heard, I had the caddy course record out at Loyalist from the Great Waterway.
Really?
Yeah, classic. It's
how many were in the field?
It was a Canadian tour event. I don't know.
7, 8.
What kind of course record is this? Like being
let's hear.
Like being fired after 2 holes, or
no,
what kind
no,
of record?
Like, we had the course record, and I was on the bag. That's a record for.
Oh, you caddied for a player.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I had to get the explanation.
Who, what'd you guys fire?
So we fired -10.
Okay.
First day, pretty
decent.
Solid.
Yeah.
Now. The thing I had is, so he hands me that green book the first day,
mm-hmm.
like as if I'm going to
know
how to.
Funny story. I'll stop you there. We can resume.
Go
it.
Ahead.
The Canadian Tour came there. When was the first tournament? 5 years ago? 4 years ago?
Great
it was right
water.
When I started caddying.
Yeah, 14, I think.
So sorry to interrupt. I had just got introduced to greens books. Augusta, when I worked for Augusta, she was doing this, you know, hold a couple
You're
fingers
doing
up.
Point, yeah.
And I'm just like, what is she doing? And all of a sudden I was like, she makes every putt she looks at.
Right.
Like I caddied for her in that tournament in Florida. And she was like 60 for 60 inside six feet. It was amazing. So I'm like, okay, you know, the Canadian Tour is coming to town in 2 months. You know, I'm going to make a greens book. So I went out. I charted every single green. You know,
why didn't you call me? I was out there doing the same thing.
You know, I thought it'd be better for me to lose money and not both of us.
Sure.
So I go out there. This took me 2 days of 12 hours, maybe 10 hours a day. I map every green. I'm out there with the Breakmaster, 5x5 grids. I put tees down there. There's 20 handicappers hitting into me, like knocking my tees down, you know.
Sorry about that.
So I, anyways, 10 hours a day, 20 hours of work. I put this product together. I couldn't be happier. I'm like, going to sell them for $20 a pop, printed 200. And
they're still selling them today.
Well, actually, I got 197 back.
Nice.
I sold 3 of them. And sorry to interrupt, but that was just, I couldn't have been lower after that. I was like, I'll just leave it to the pros.
That's, I mean, solid investment.
So you guys shoot 10 under the first round.
We shot 10 under the first round.
Without your greens book,
well, no, which you apparently didn't need.
No, we had the greens book, but I'm looking at this thing, and I have no idea what the f*** this thing is,
yeah.
Right? It makes no sense
of
to
course.
Me. There's lines everywhere. There's numbers everywhere.
It's like the Da Vinci Code or something.
Say, in my notes here, I had it's like the Da Vinci Code.
Wow,
so
I could see through your computer.
That's pretty impressive, actually. We got a big budget here. We all got MacBooks for the podcast.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We're drinking a good beer, though. So.
Yeah, welcome. Hey,
the budget was spent where it needed to be spent.
The budget was spent in the right places. You can thank Flagstick Golf for that.
Yeah.
How did you teach yourself with this thing, the green book?
Well, that's actually kind of interesting because I did pretty much self-teach myself. I wouldn't consider myself an extreme expert on it. So there's probably maybe 15 or 20 guys around my age who I'm pretty close with on tour. Most of them are much better caddies than me in the sense of the wins they have, major winners, definitely tournament winners. So I would get a lot of other people's input on it. I basically learned to use it that I prefer it on long putts because it's obviously an aero system, degree of slope, you know, you got to still see the Yellow Brick Road, perfect pace. There's a lot of factors in it. So I learned pretty quick that if I was going to trust it on 6 foot putts, that it needed to be hit with the pace I was imagining. And I had kind of realized that in the times when people had been pleased with my green reading, I had just given my true opinion of seeing it going in. So I feel like, and you're seeing it a lot, obviously, with the rule changes with the greens books too, that it like is slowing up time and slowing up the process of reading a putt. I think there's lots of people on tour who love it and lots of people on tour who don't even think about using it. I just, yeah, like you said, got other people's input on it, learned what my best way to use it was, and yeah, just went with it from there.
Did you guys use this last year?
The greens books?
Yeah.
Yeah, we use it.
Because I think you should throw it out. Yeah. I got stats here. 132nd in putting. Either she's got to throw you out or she's got to throw that book out.
Well, I mean, I hope. Hopefully Ryan O'Toole doesn't listen to this before I take off for Australia.
Hey, she had lots of greens.
We
did okay.
We actually went through a stint. Our last, I think, 5 or 6 events, we weren't using it. And maybe 5 or 6, maybe it was 7 or 8. But it actually, we came 6th in Evian and 3rd in Taiwan, not using it. We both as a team got to the point where we preferred using it from approach angles, right, where, you know,
where you're going to pitch
if
from,
we're hitting
where
a 6 iron or we're trying to hit it 170 and right, and it's going to release 15, we want to know if that's on a downslope, if that's on a side slope. So we actually started using it pretty much only in the fairway.
I mean, it seems to be working.
Yeah.
Top 20 on tour in greens and regulations. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, use it for that instead of the other one for you, I
that's
think.
That's of little impact of myself. I'm not going to take credit for that. I'll pump her tires for a minute, but I think that Ryan is definitely a top 20 ball striker on the tour. The shots she hits, the way she hits the golf ball, she can really, really put it and shape it where she wants to. Yeah, so that has nothing to do with the greens book or her.
So what is it you think you add from a skill standpoint? I mean, what is it that you contribute besides carrying the bag?
Well, I mean, it's the kind of thing where every caddy player relationship is extremely different. You have certain caddies, I mean, who don't do as much for players. You have caddies who do everything for players. I think that if you're talking about Ryan specifically, I do think that something I'm very good at is adjusting to conditions. Obviously, when we're out there, we don't know what the weather's going to do. It's going to be windy. Where's the wind coming from? How is that going to affect our ball flight in the air? You know, where to leave the golf ball. Ryan's been working with a system called Decade.
Mm-hmm. For Scott Fawcett?
Yeah, yep. Scott Fawcett created a program. It's kind of telling you where to aim and you know, where you should be trying to leave the golf ball. And she introduced that to me, and I kind of spent some time to learn it. And I think that, obviously, like I said, Ryan's a great ball striker, but the top 20th in greens regulation that we were talking about earlier, it's definitely a product of us knowing when it's time to attack and when it's time to take a 25-footer. Because, you know, if you put 10 balls down in the fairway anywhere to any pin, she could hit it to 5 feet, but that might be 2 out of 10 times. So waiting for our spots, I think, and, you know, understanding the way that me and her want to play. Also, we're pretty good friends, and I think that's something that you can't really overvalue. You know, we're spending 40 or 50 hours a week together, and you obviously want to enjoy that time. And I think it's easy for us to lean on each other in that sense because we really get along.
I mean, when you're talking about those skills and adapting those conditions, do you think it's more important to have those skills on the LPGA Tour where you're, you know, it's an international tour now. You're going to lots of different places where, you know, PGA Tour, yes, they have a lot of international events, you know, World Golf Championships and things like that. But the LPGA Tour certainly doesn't have the homogenized atmosphere of the same every week. You guys have to deal with a lot of things in a lot of different countries, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, definitely from a caddy standpoint, we're not like the PGA Tour where they're doing their West Coast swings and, you know, they're always in the same kind of climate. We actually very often, I would say more weeks than not, have rain delays and have situations where the course is changing drastically on us in a week. So from a caddy standpoint, I mean, yeah, it's very important for you to be on top of that and be able to understand how that makes your player react. And it is even a lot of things that are outside the actual golf circumstances. I mean, you know, when it's raining and I have to cover the clubs, or, you know, you wish you had 6 or 7 hands, like, you got to keep her dry, the clubs dry, then you're yardage books is ripping in too because of the rain, and you got to, you know, your hands are freezing. But the caddy skills definitely come into play more because we are switching climates and switching circumstances. I don't think it's, I mean, it's more a value, I guess, on the LPGA Tour because there is a bit more strategy involved, in my opinion, because on the PGA Tour, they're all hitting it so far and so high that, you know, if they do happen to hit it in the rough one hole, they're going to either go for the green and hit it in the greenside bunker or make par some way, whereas a lot of the time in the ladies game, they have a lot of comparable skills, but those are usually pitch outs or those are usually times to really do your best to save par. So there is a certain value in that.
You mentioned you have to know your spots, pick your spots at the right time. How many vetoes do you think you have a year where it's like no matter what?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Like I get does she give
probably
you,
zero in the first year, but maybe yeah, you're earning more now,
I feel
right?
Like, that's a good question. I feel like I've definitely earned more, and we have had this specific conversation.
Is it in your contract now? Like, no. I get one this year.
I mean, she's a good negotiator, so she knows not to put it in writing. We had this specific conversation where she says that I at least get one a week.
What, a week?
Yeah.
Wow, you're doing well.
My wife says the same thing. Yeah. I've never had a veto in my life.
We probably have a comparable relationship. We spend enough time together, and I'm told when to go to bed, but no, it's... I would say that because...
I'm told where to go to bed.
If we miss a cut, so am I. So, I mean, in the sense of the veto, like, there are times, admittedly, that I will choose not to speak up in situations that I might not think we're making the correct decision. But that's in a situation where maybe it's a wedge versus a 9-iron where... there's no water, there's bunkers around the green, she's a great bunker player. I know even if she doesn't execute the shot that we're not in trouble. So those are the kind of spots where I don't choose to pick a battle, and there are lots of spots where I'm not telling her what to do because she always has the last say, but she knows I'm saying this has to happen. An example comes to mind. I think we were in Evian where we had finished sixth, one of the best finishes of our year this year, and in the third round, or the second round, actually, which was kind of ironic. I think she shot 8 under in the third round after this. But we started on 10, and we're on 18, and, you know, we're 2 over. She'd hit a drive left, and we've got a 6-iron in from the rough, and it's like a perfect 6-iron number if we, like, nuke it from a perfect rough lie. But it's, like, a horrible lie, and there's a tree in her backswing, and she's, like, sizing it up to try to hit the hero shot. And I'm just like, okay, don't speak yet. Like, I know I've got to, like, get her off this. And she, like, you know, she's like, okay, this is fine. Like, I know the numbers. And I'm like, okay, you know, like, do you think the 6-iron covers the 165 we need it to or whatever? We hit 6-iron, I think, 172 at this point in the air. And, you know, she's like, yeah, you know, that's good. And I, in my mind, know that she's kind of just fuming a bit. And it's more because she wants to hit the shot. And that's our, like, fairway number. I'm like, okay, so we want 165 carry. This goes 172. You know, what's the rough going to make this play? She's like, I don't know, 165. And I'm like, okay, that covers the water by like a half a yard. You know, you like this? She's like, I do. And I was like, it's not going to fly that far. We need to hit 4-iron if you want to get over the water. That won't have enough carry. She's like, I can hit the 6-iron. Anyways, long story short, I'm like, it's not the time. And the other players in our group who were both friends of ours actually were kind of laughing at the conversation because they knew that Ryan was a little... She's got such a competitive attitude that I like it in her. She never gives up. You know, she never really makes bad decisions. But this was a time where... I needed to be like, you know, we're pitching out. Obviously, you know, we do the pitch out, the smart play, hit it to 8 feet, and another one of my bad reads, we don't make the putt. But it was a good example where we went to the next tee, we're 3 over in a major on the first 9 holes, and she's like, we made the right decision, let's go, and just coincidentally shoot 8-under in the next round.
Do you think you run into those situations more at majors or the big events? I mean, you know, I look back at the Canadian Open when it was the Ottawa Hunt Club. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, greens were 12-7. The rough was super deep.
Yeah, that was a good setup.
You know, it was, you know, a couple players said to me that week that it felt like they were at a major, you know.
Which the Canadian Open usually does feel that way, but that specific setup
right.
was
but
very
But do you
good.
Think you run into those situations
yes.
a little bit more then?
I would say yes, for sure, because obviously the course setup is meant to be more demanding, and they typically are just better golf courses. Course setup wise, rough length, obviously green speed, fairway speed, and you know, layout. So the majors take more work in that sense, and also in the sense that they're usually typically courses we haven't seen or maybe have seen once, since that's like a changing rotation, whereas like maybe 15 or 20 of the events we see all year, I've now been there 4 or 5 times where my walks are a touch easier in the preparation for a week. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, majors definitely take a lot more work and a lot more strategic moves where, like, you know, say Ryan's used to shooting 10 or 12 under in a tournament. Not that she doesn't know this, but even's going to put you in a position to win at the U.S. Open. So as much as it stinks if you start with 2 bogeys and 5 holes, if you hit it left on the 6th, you've got to punch out and try to make par. That doesn't change your outlook of a 72-hole event.
It sounds like one of the things you're not actually saying, you're saying a lot of it, but you're not actually saying the words, is a lot of it is brought back to the psychology of an actual human being.
Yeah.
Which is something that I'm hugely interested in, not only in my career, which is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Where I do have to work with people a lot, but how, like, do you study psychology? Is that something that you're reading books on and trying to get a different understanding of how the brain works and how emotions work and making decisions?
I mean, I'm certainly not studying on it in a literal sense, but it's impossible to ignore that is what I'm doing day to day. Working with Ryan or Augusto or Brad or anyone that I've worked with, I mean, a perfect example would be, I mean, there's probably 100, but just off the top of my head, Arya Jutanagarn, who is the clear number one player on the LPGA Tour right now. I believe 3 or 4 years ago, Scott, she's shooting like 80s mm-hmm. in some events.
Yeah,
and you know, everyone knew the talent she had, but, well, you know, come up to the LPGA Tour, make a couple adjustments, maybe you'll be the next one.
Cut that.
But you know, it's the kind of thing where all the players on the LPGA Tour, inside, for argument's sake, we'll say the top 80 on the money list, can win each week.
Sure.
But it's not the same as the PGA Tour, where you see those 80th and 100th and 120th ranked players winning, because the mental aspect that the top 40 players have, always being in contention to win, is something that you have to earn. You see tons of girls come out who have all the potential in the world, but they don't pan out, because you do need to develop that psychological side of things. It's very much controlling pressures you aren't used to, and you know, you have to learn to either accept when you fail in those situations and get better, or if you're lucky enough to conquer them the first time you're in it. Obviously we saw Gabby Lopez win Blue Bay in China, and that was the kind of thing. She's actually a personal friend of mine, because I mean, I'm friends with a lot of girls out there, but I was lucky enough to go to the Olympics. I was lucky enough to go to the Olympics with one of the players I worked with in 2016 at Rio,
from
Mexico.
Big time by a guy from Napanee, but no. Hey,
no. I'm not getting. I was just saying, she won, and we were happy for it. You know, it was her first try and first time being there. And
just to let everyone know, Ryan is a very modest guy.
On the LPGA Tour, though, it's different than the PGA Tour, where if you see someone you aren't familiar with on Sunday for the first time, you're not expecting them to win against Lexi Thompson's or Brooks or Arias or Lydia's. So it would be cool to see that happen.
I am curious. You've obviously caddied for both the men's side of the game and the ladies' side of the game. What is the difference in the psychology between both tours, or both, you know, the difference in sexes?
Yeah. I mean, other than, like, you know, obviously the skill set is different. The women hit it a little bit straighter, think their way a little bit better, but obviously the men hit it further and higher and can go for a little bit more. I would say with my two experiences, the psychology of the women's game is that there is a little bit more up and downs throughout the course of a round, where it's like, you know, like a bogey, I really got to like be even keel, or a couple birdies and keep it straight. But with the men that I've caddied for, at least, and obviously a lot of it was Brad, caddied for a couple guys in WebQ school, not as much, nearly as much with the guys, but the men have a bit more of a I can go for it more mentality.
A little bit more ego behind
things. I mean, for lack of a better sense, because they, that's actually well said, because the men know they can hit a lot of shots and choose to hit them more than when the women know they can hit the shot the same amount, but will be more rational, saying this isn't the time to do it. Whether that's through a caddy's influence or just through their own experiences, but, you know, say the comparables would be maybe the way a 7-iron lands for a woman, maybe a wedge would land for a guy. So it's a different decision once a girl has a 4-iron and a guy has a 6-iron, you know, over water. The girl will be like, okay, if I have like a 4 hybrid, you know, I'll just lay up and hit my wedge 6 feet and I'll probably make it. Whereas, you know, yeah, it's still 6-iron for the guy, but when they flare it right in the bunker, hit it to 10 feet and make par, and they're like, how did that happen? It's like, well, yeah, you could pull off the 6-iron 2 out of 10 times, but maybe it's not the decision to make.
Is there a different psychology then as far as from a caddying perspective? I mean, you're dealing, I mean, I've had the situation of a little bit of caddying from both sides.
Yeah,
of
you
it,
caddy
so.
At Hunt, right? For that
Grace.
Not a big deal, Scott McCloud.
I had the course record locally, too.
We'll get back to that. Yeah, we'll get back to that.
But I mean,
did you get the flag after round
yeah,
one?
Yeah, no, I got him to sign it.
They get one every round, right?
Yeah, I kept his cell phone number. I don't think he's playing anymore, but just in case he makes it.
I'm just saying as far as...
Tell him to buy a greens book.
Difference between... you know, caddying a little bit on the Canadian tour, seeing the LPGA, but dealing with those players, do you feel that from on the LPGA side of it, you can kind of sub in a little bit more? You know what I mean? You can kind of voice yourself a little bit more, where some of the guys don't allow that as much?
I do think that definitely exists. I think that on the LPGA tour, it's maybe a bit more apparent when things are new in a work relationship, when they want help, they'll just flat out ask you, like, hey, like, do you like this? You know, is it 8? Like, do I nuke 8 because I know I can, or should I hit a soft 7 and take 20 feet? Whereas a guy, maybe, and this isn't about anyone specifically, but more my just feelings in general, you know, between that same 8 and 7, if they nuke an 8, it's covering a bunker in the front by 2 yards, and now they're not making bogey. Instead of asking you, they just look at both and pull a club.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm in no, like, I'm not going to do any better if I'm caddying for a man or a woman.
Sure.
If they've made the decision to hit 8, it's their, even though it could cost me, it's their decision to miss in the bunker and make an instant bogey. Whereas if I tell them to hit little 7 and they don't commit to an execution, now for 2 or 3 holes, they don't trust me because I made a decision that didn't work out.
So what do you think then, what's the big attribute, the number one attribute that any caddy should have?
Knowing when to speak and when not to speak. Okay. I mean, there are, and it's 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D. There are a lot of things that a caddy needs to have. But I would say knowing when to speak and knowing when not to speak. Because the reality is, all the caddies who have been on the LPGA Tour, because that's a better experience that I can have speaking, who have been on the tour for more than 15 events, know what they're doing. And then obviously the guys who've been there for 2, 3, 20, 30 years really know what they're doing. So every time a caddy gets up to a shot, we know what we want you to do. You know, because what we're imagining is you executing it the exact way that we know you can, 2 out of 10 times with a long iron, 5 out of 10 times with the mid iron, and 9 out of 10 with wedges. So as soon as I get to the ball, because typically myself, the way I work is I like to be 15 steps ahead of Ryan. We talk for the first half of the walk, and I want to have the stuff done when she gets there. I know exactly what I want her to hit. I know that I want her to hit 9 iron because the wind's hurting 6 yards from the right, and it's in the morning in Phoenix, and it's colder than 3 hours. You know, we know all that stuff, but you have to know when to speak.
How hard is it, though, to jump in and do that when you're just starting with a player? You know, you're comfortable in yourself of what your skills are, but, you know, you obviously want to have a relationship with that player. So how hard is it to do, especially in the first few events?
It's tough because, I mean, you're being hired for a reason, and that feels good because, I mean, I'll use the example. Jenny Shin is a player I worked for at something called the Champions Trophy at the end of this year. Ryan, let me go do a gig for her.
So you decided to go and give freezing in Korea? Was that what
it was? Pretty cold, but I mean, it was a cool experience. I had never been in a team competition. I've never been lucky enough to be in a Solheim, which that's a goal of mine and Ryan's this year, is to be on the Solheim Cup team. But I had never been in a team competition, and I had this opportunity to go and work with Jenny, and she's someone I've respected for a very long time. I think she's a really good player. And I had the opportunity to go work for her, and, you know, flying, I had a lot of time on the 12 or 14 hour flight or whatever it was to Korea. And I'm thinking, you know, how's this going to work? And I'm like, well, I've done it so many times before. Basically, the best thing you can do is to, and because they're going to tell you what to do. They're not hiring you to be timid and be like, oh, okay, like, are you going to be a good caddy? They're hiring you, and they're going to tell you what to do. So we sat down for breakfast. I asked her what she wanted. You know, you either do it correctly the first hole, do your job, and you go to the second, or if you say something incorrect, they're going to be like, hey, you know, I'm happy you're here. I didn't like that, and you're going to change that, and then you do.
What do you think the ladies don't get enough credit for out there on the LPGA Tour?
Wow, that's a good question. I would just say skill, to be honest. I mean, I feel like even for me, if I'm being completely honest, before I fell into this at the O'Kane Women's Open and then, you know, was lucky enough to now be working with Ryan over these 4 or 5 years, I wasn't ever a fan of the LPGA other than maybe knowing Annika Sorenstam had been winning everything, then Lorena Ochoa. They're just, like, very good ball strikers. You know, I've caddied for a couple girls who hit, you know, no more than a 6-iron and then go right to hybrids and woods. And to see these girls hit it 220 off the tee on a 400-yard par 4 and then a pin be 12 on and me be like, hey, you know, what do you want to land this? And they're like 2 yards on with like a 5-wood and then literally do it. And you're like, I'm like reading putts from the fairway. I'm like, okay, well, it's like 3 balls right to left with your 7-wood. Like,
and you do,
do you want me to tend it or no? Like,
he's a great green reader.
Yeah, yeah. This was before Greensbook, so I was really in my element. I was really crushing it. But they are amazing ball strikers and can, you know, not with the flair of the PGA Tour hitting it a mile high, but, you know, it they're hitting it. And Scott, you've been to enough girls' events and been caddying in groups. Like, they hit it exactly where they want.
What's your typical day out there? I mean, I know every day is going to be different.
Uh-huh.
You know, I look back, you're talking about weather and stuff like that, and I can, you know, remember the Tuesday of that week at that Canadian Open when the hail was coming down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you were out on for your practice rounds that day or whatever.
I think the Pro-Am was Wednesday, so we were probably doing a practice round or something.
Yeah, I mean, it just took forever for a day. But, I mean, what's the typical? I mean, most people would sit there and think it's 4.5 hours, but it's not, right?
I mean, I guess I'll use an example of, like, maybe if I haven't been to, let's say, like a U.S. Open where it's different every week or different every year, different course. Fly in Sunday night, ideally. Sometimes it's early Monday morning. So fly in Sunday night, check into a hotel, get your rental car, check into a hotel. Go to your hotel, get up in the morning, check the forecast. If it's going to rain now or not, then you take your rain gear. You don't. Go to the course. Typically, walk 9 holes. That we're going to play that day. Cause
how early are you out there? How early?
In this specific example, I mean, I'm getting there at 6:30, 6 a.m. because
what
I got
to. What time do you go and do the green books that you sell in the pro shop?
Well, you see, those are the kind of things that.
You can buy those.
I'm
now.
Lucky enough to be able to buy those now. Yeah. And I'm lucky enough that now I don't have to use them and pay $100 a week. But luckily, I'm not making them, or the whole tour would be putting with the wedges. Couldn't figure it out. Yeah, I mean, if it's like that U.S. Open example, I'll get there at 6 a.m. because Ryan will typically tell me, okay, let's play 9 holes at 10 o'clock. So I will go and walk the 9 holes we're going to see before that. Have a pretty good idea of where we're going to hit the golf ball. And I would say maybe if it's 9 holes, there's maybe 2 holes where we talk more than the strategy I had made for us is. So now 6 o'clock, now it's that 9 or 10, we'll go play. Eat lunch, practice for 2 or 3 more hours. She'll go home, and then on that Monday, I will then walk the back 9 so I can save some sleep for the Tuesday and not have to get up at 6. And then that same 10 o'clock routine will start again where we this time would eat breakfast before since I'm not walking the course. You know, pick up her bag at the car in the parking lot, walk it to the clubhouse, eat, go practice for 20 or 30 minutes, go play, and then do a little wind down after. Then a Wednesday is usually at majors. Her coach is there. He does a really good job, so he's going to work with us. He has, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 players who are always in the majors. Works with Carlota Segonda, Suzanne Pedersen, too. So we'll get our hour slot, work with him, and then get a good sleep. Hopefully some hockey's on, and then crush the first round.
We'll get into some hockey in a bit. I am curious, for anybody that isn't following Ryan on Instagram, this girl puts in work in the gym.
Oh, yeah.
My lord.
She works out for both of us, for sure. Well, like, you know, I'm like, all right, Ryan, I'm going for a beer, watch the Stars lose tonight, and you can go work out for us both.
For the listeners home, I can tell she's put in work. Ryan's he's crushing the beers. Well, I'm right with you. Don't worry.
Yeah, of course.
How often are they in the gym on the regular work week?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan's like an exceptional example. There's like Lexi and Ryan. Suzanne Pedersen obviously just had a child, but she's always was crushing the gym. I would say if you're looking at like the average gym time for a player on tour, it's probably like 4 or 5 times a week. You know, they're not, and those girls are there doing work, but they're not like crushing the gym. They're just, they're doing stuff to stay in shape.
That's maintenance, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're not trying to be bodybuilders or anything. They're just trying to make, they're basically doing it to sustain not having an injury.
Right.
Because obviously that's awful.
And I mean, back to her Instagram page, the reason I actually first started with her, like, is there anything she cannot do? Like, watching her,
she's like
wakeboarding.
She,
yeah,
like,
wakeboarding, yeah.
Wakeboards, oh, like, takes these 4x4s out in the desert and, like, does these cool track runs.
The wake skating is actually how I followed her. I started doing that a little bit in the summer. And
what do you do that with, like, skis?
No, like, it's a wake skate. You know, like,
like a boot, just a boot.
No boots. You're, like, on a skateboard on the water.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant like skates. That's cool.
Do you even follow your employer's Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I just see your name and like it, and I'm like, okay, she's my
boss. No, I put on hockey.
I'll toss a like.
I go on hockey skates and I stand behind a boat in the water. Yeah, that's how that.
That must rust up the blades.
Yeah, there doesn't hurt me on the ice.
Yeah,
I mean, she just seems like an all world talent.
She's
anything
super
she does.
Fit. She's super fit. Yeah.
Like week to week when you're out there.
Well, she took me to the gym. Remember we were talking about this?
Hit me.
Oh my
God. Did that
God.
Just like crush you or what?
Dude. Okay. So like it got to the point where like we're very good friends and you know, we can talk about whatever we talk about. We won't talk about all those things right here right now.
You don't want me to bring up.
Yeah. We won't bring that up. But, you know, we're in Asia. I think it was like the Korean event or something. Yeah. And she's like, you know, Dez, you got to get in the gym. Like, you know, you're getting a little tubby here. Like, you know, I'm not trying to be too rude, but I want my caddy to look good. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do it
she
tomorrow.
She needs some sex appeal from the caddy.
Well, she's got to hire another caddy.
She's got a really nice looking golf bag this year, so she needs something better.
Exactly. She just wants the lampshade to look good.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, we can talk
but
numbers.
She took me to the gym. And anyway, so the first day I do it, and typically the players always stay in the same hotel, host hotel for an event. And you have your caddies who date players, who are married to players or brothers and sisters, and two or three of them saw me in the gym with Ryan. And, like, it couldn't have been hotter in Korea. And it looked like it had just rained with, like, what I'm doing in the gym. And Ryan was being really nice, you know, helped me out, started me with, like, low weight so I wouldn't, like, break my back.
Saw a couple tens. Couple tens.
I mean, they were kilograms. They were 7'5". So that's not a big deal. But So we're, like, working out, and then we're out the course the next day, and, like, in Korea, it's like a 60-player field. You know, at the end of the year, the girls who did well at the money list get to go. And we're at the golf course the next day, and everyone's like, how was your workout? And I was like, oh, my God. Ryan's like, yeah, I put it on Instagram. Sorry. So she ended up training, like, four or five of the caddies that week would start to come with me. And it actually inspired me to get a gym membership. I don't know. That'll take a while. A little longer. That'll fade. But, yeah, she's really good in the gym. Stays really fit.
Well, I mean, one of the things you mentioned there is the players are always in certain hotels. You didn't mention the caddies are also always in certain hotels.
Yeah, that's like, you know, we're down the street. Yeah, we're hotel Airbnb.
Where's the craziest place you've stayed in while on tour?
I know there's a story you're going to tell because you told it to me when you were in like Indianapolis. Yeah, it was like you were a Symmetra tour.
South Bend.
Right, Symmetra tour.
The first year I caddied on the Symmetra tour with Augusta, we would typically stay in housing with the tour. She was nice enough. We were good friends before golf, and yeah, stay with me, you know, whatever. But this one week in South Bend, Indiana, or whatever it is, I don't know, the States, whatever.
Yeah, it was between
where Notre Dame is.
South Bend.
So I am staying in this like pretty crappy hotel, and you know, it's $250 for the week, pretty sweet. And
people live there full time.
Yeah. So I'd gone to the college bar on like the Monday or Tuesday with a couple of the caddies. And the bartender there was like, hey, like me and a couple of my buddies are going out on Thursday or Friday or whatever. Do you want to come with me? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, got his number and we were going to go out with all his friends. So the night that Friday, I am going to go out and just end up passing out, you know, 10 or 11 at night. Right when I was supposed to go. Wake up the next morning, 8 o'clock, to go for the McDonald's or something, I think it was, right beside our hotel. I go out and put my glasses on, and I'm like, why is there a cop car outside my door? And then I was like, why is there 4 or 5 cop cars outside my door? So I, like, take my key, shut my door. I go around the corner, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, that is like a SWAT van or something. So this big black van's there, and then all of a sudden this cop comes up to me and, like,
like, doesn't tackle me, but he's like,
Excuse me, sir, are you Ryan DeVoe?
Yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm Scott McCloud. I'm here writing an article.
Do you make green books?
Yeah. We're looking to buy three. We heard you're our man.
We want to double your sales.
Yeah. Oh, my, the greatest day of all time. Not this isn't actually, though. So then, like, he, like, gets me, you know, don't come past this yellow line. And I was like, what's going on, man? He's like, what are you doing here? And by this point, I look back besides the cop cars, and I'm the only car left in the hotel because it's like 8 or 9. And I guess everyone had heard this going on last night or whatever. And I was like, what happened? And he's like, we can't tell you. And I was like, what happened here? Like, I'm staying here till Sunday. And he was like, well, there was a murder last night. And I was like, for real? And he's like, yeah, dude. Like, he wasn't pumped about it. Like, I mean, yeah, murder! Like, Ja Rule. Who was that? Murder, Ja Rule. And he was like, yeah, there was a murder or whatever. You know, obviously this isn't funny, but he's like, it had been a drug deal gone wrong where they got in a fist fight. The guy was on the ground and he like drove over him and killed him. And I was like, I'm going to go check out. It was like, good idea. So
I get my extra
out.
$25
back? Well, obviously, you know, my appetite was a bit taken away, but I still went to McDonald's. I was hungry. So I go to McDonald's. I get the two things or whatever, the breakfast sandwiches, come back to my hotel, shower, you know, pack my bag, come out. I come out of my hotel room, and like I said before, I was still the only car there, and there was like the two or three local camera crews that were still there, and they were like, hey, can we like interview you? And I was like, no, not interested. And I was like leaving, and I was like, I was single at the time, and the one girl was pretty cute, and she was like, can we please have an interview? And I was like, all right, give me your business card
mistake.
So I can see the interview. So yeah, huge mistake. So I do this interview. It was like a bunch of random questions. You hear anything? Blah, blah, blah. So I go to the golf course. We play our round, tell a couple girls about it, go to my new hotel. Come back the next day, and like all the players on tour were like, you were involved in a murder. Like, what is going on? And I was like, no. Like, but yeah, that was pretty crazy.
So that's the day that Augusta fired you, eh?
I think she took a couple more weeks. I started reading more putts, and then I was done. I went there a day. We missed that cut. I went and made a greens book, and I got fired.
Before we got started, you told another story to me about staying in Boston at somebody's house. You want to share that interesting one?
We'll go with no names here. We'll go with Window Above Me is the caddy. That's his name.
All right.
So we're staying in Boston, and Window Above Me, he's a good buddy of mine, and you know, he's great, like, hey, I've got some housing in Boston, and this was still on the Symetra tour, so we're
of
like,
of course, were you playing out that way?
I honestly don't remember the name. Great. Yeah, we'll call it Ceiling Above Me. No, but
TPC.
Anyways, Window Above Me, the caddy gets us this housing, which is great. You know, gonna save us $300 or $400. We go there on Sunday night from the other tournament, and we meet the family of the girl we're staying with. And he had met this girl, you know, just on a spring break trip or whatever. So we meet their family and they're like, yeah, we're so happy to have you. We're going to come out and watch the tournament or whatever. Yep, sounds great. So I go to the golf course the next day and we had an early day. And Window Above Me was caddying for a different girl.
Great name. Terrible on a jersey,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
elbow to elbow.
Yeah. It's not going to fit on the back. It's like the crown. But so Window Above Me is caddying an offsite pro-am, and I get back at 12 o'clock, and the mom of this girl who we're staying with, who I presume knew what was going to go on. I mean, they met on spring break. Like, they weren't, like, doing arts and crafts.
Yeah,
like,
so that's not a good start, right?
You know,
off the bat,
you know,
spring break,
hey,
yeah.
These caddies are going to come stay with us. Like, so
I haven't seen a woman that wants them in weeks.
I get back there, and I'm just coming to, like, watch TV or something because my day had already ended at 12 or 1. Window Above Me's clothes are on the driveway. The mother of this girl is hysterical, and the dog had all over his clothes. And I was like,
"He's having a bad
what's,
day."
I was like, "What's for lunch?" You know, I said, "See you,
Sir McDonald's."
She's like, "She's like, where's Window Above Me? Where's Window Above Me?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Like, I just stopped getting." She's like, Window Above Me, you guys have to all get out. Like, I know what Window Above Me did last night. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, he must have, like,
who knows?
He must have cuddled. You know, you never know. So I call Window Above Me, and I'm like, dude, like,
don't come back.
Operation don't come back here. So he's like, dude, can you get my clothes, please? Get my clothes.
You don't want your clothes.
I don't want them. Anyways, long story short, she's like, I will go to the golf course and make him lose his job if Window Above Me doesn't come back here. So we get Window Above Me back there, an awkward exit, and probably ended up staying at another murder hotel.
So, Ryan, I mean, obviously, how many years now you've been caddying for Ryan? Two?
Almost three. Yeah, two and a half.
Almost three.
Seriously?
So, I mean,
I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Maybe two and a half. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you were with her 17 Canadian Open. I remember you were there with her.
After the Olympics?
Yeah, pretty much. I worked three or four players after the Olympics with Alejandra. I did the full year with her. And then, yeah, the year after the Olympics is when Ryan picked me up. So maybe like just over two.
I mean, what is it that you've come to really appreciate about her abilities? I mean, obviously she's an outstanding athlete. But is there something that maybe we don't always see that, you know, makes her stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, if work ethic aside, which her work ethic is unparalleled on the girls tour. She works as hard as any player out there. Just her ball striking, I mean, like, and her compete level, like, she'll never give up. It's something every caddy wants from a player, but whether we're just grinding to make a cut or on a Sunday in 50th place turning it into a 20th, like, she never gives up, but her actual skills, her ball striking is amazing. She the way she gets through the ball and is able to put it where she wants to put it is, it's amazing.
I mean, you talk about that as far as the determination, you wanting that, because obviously that, you know, that impacts your salary too, right?
Yeah, definitely. My salary and my enjoyment of it, because I feel like I'm not going to be caddying if I'm not enjoying my day-to-day work, because it's not like I'm losing money out there, and obviously it's different now that I'm at a caliber of player like Ryan, who was 35th on money list or whatever last year.
So you're finally making some money.
Yeah, not just like, you know, paying the bills and putting like a couple grand away a year, you know. It's kind
for
of
the
something.
Record, he's still got free shirts on that he was given clearly.
Yeah, wow. I'm wearing like a tournament
sponsorship
shirt.
You know?
Yeah. Sponsorship.
Hey, you gotta do what you can.
Not wanting caddies to be homeless, but yeah, it's really good when someone doesn't give up, because obviously not Ryan specifically or
just any player.
Right? You don't want a caddy for someone who gives up when you're not allowed to give up. You know, if you're going to miss the cut by 10 shots, if you're a caddy and you decide to mail it in, then you're done. You're fired. Like, you're a caddy. You can't ever give up on me. But, and through their own right, they're the boss, but the players are the ones who have the ultimate say in the way they hit the shots and the commitment level in which they do that with. And it's nice to have a player that never gives up and always gives it her all, because the reality is, you know, we all say out there, you're going to make 10% of your money or 100% of your money and 10% of your events. Like, you don't win every week. You do well very infrequently, and you try to tread water.
You mentioned earlier about goals. You said something about, you know, Solheim Cup,
yeah,
or whatever.
Definitely.
I mean, is that something you two talk about, or is she just sort of present you with the list and say, this is what my goals are? Or do you sort of have some input and say, hey, you know, you should be thinking about that?
Yeah, I feel like I definitely have some input. It's the kind of thing where we make goals together. Ultimately, our goal is to go about our business each day and have the same process, you know, and keep to our own strategy, not try to worry about what anyone else is doing, work our hardest. But there are goals we make. I mean, you know, we want to make the Solheim Cup team. We've talked about that multiple times, you know, last year. We're knocking on the door, you know, for that last spot right now.
He wants free clothes. That's what he really
yeah,
wants.
Exactly.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Des, we did it. We made the team. Free clothes.
I'll be warm for another week.
I'll be warm. We got some more of those red, white, and blue blankets. But yeah, no, that's definitely a goal that we have made. Not to say that it doesn't have any more or less significance than our day-to-day and week-to-week goals of performing in tournaments and keeping a good attitude and doing what we do, but that's definitely something that's on our mind each week. Maybe if it's in the back of our head or the forefront of our head. But
in terms of goals, what course are you looking at ahead right now where you're like, these are the ones where we have to make that 100%? Sorry, what was that? The 10% of the 100% of our earnings.
Well, I mean, obviously it's cliche, but the majors are what are most important. I think last year we probably made, the top of my head, but probably 60 5% of our money in the five majors that we played.
Decent.
Yeah, I mean, the reality on the LPGA Tour is that obviously the money is less. The men have more exposure, and that is what it is. You know, the men have more advertising and more business opportunities, but the majors are significant purses where it's impossible to ignore that things are elevated on those weeks. They're on better golf courses. You know, there's more people in the stands. There's more TV coverage. There's more everything going on. So those are the weeks when you have to definitely elevate your game.
And I guess the Canadian Open comes in there too, because obviously the purse is huge there, right?
The purse is big in the Canadian Open. It's always on a really good golf course. It's something that all the best players come to and respect as well. I would say that the Canadian Open is definitely... I'm not going to go as far to say as it's viewed as a major, but it feels like one.
Sure.
And it gets the respect of a major for sure.
Yeah, and we'll clarify that. CP Women's Open.
We'll
bow to the sponsor there.
Yeah. I mean, I could use
Canadian
a free
trainer
once in a while. That's
exactly.
Good tournament.
CP Women's Open at Magna Golf Club up in Aurora this year. Mm-hmm. I don't have the exact dates here because I'm not a great podcast host.
Third week of August.
This is why we bring Scott around.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah. Photographic memory.
When you're coming up to the CP Women's Open, how does that change for you? Obviously, you being Canadian, how does the pressure change for you in on that event?
I mean, that's a good question. I wouldn't say so much that the pressure changes. It's the kind of thing where I would be lying if I didn't say it's something I get extremely excited for. If I'm lucky enough to have it in the area that's close enough to home, you know, I get to have some friends and obviously my parents and some people I care about come up and watch. That means a lot to me. That, you know, I know they're following every week and they get to come up and do that. But yeah, just speaking to your point about actually being Canadian, it's a big deal for me. I pretty much come to develop a good friendship with most of the caddies and players on tour, and they obviously all know I'm Canadian, so it's kind of a special week where they're excited for me to be coming home. It's not the kind of scenario where there's lots of Canadian events. You know, we lost
Manulife.
Yeah, Manulife.
So now you've got one, right?
Yeah, so this is the only tournament every year I'm lucky enough to come back home and do. So whether it is close to home or not, it means the same amount, but it's just a little bit going to be a bit more special this year when it's close to home.
Well, I do remember Brent Snedeker won the Canadian Open, correct me if I'm wrong, and
his caddy
is from Canada, and you can almost see the emotion on his caddy's
face.
Former caddy.
Yeah.
Scotty Vail.
Who's he got now? Henrik?
Yeah, I think so. So he moved off.
Henrik,
he's got
Henrik.
Scotty Vail moved over to Henrik.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But he worked for him when he won that. No, you're right.
It's okay.
Kind of a big
but
deal.
But yeah, Scotty Vail was with him for a long time. He's
he was.
Yeah.
I think I asked a question there. Scotty Vail clearly showed some emotion on the 18th tee, or green, sorry. You don't win on the tee. On the 18th green when they did
you,
win.
You do if you negotiate your bets properly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, being Canadian, there's many other caddies on the tours that are Canadian. And just a few years ago, Brent Snedeker won. Was it last year?
Two years ago.
The Canadian Open.
All right, yeah, it might have been three because actually...
That young Dutoit played with him too in the final round.
Exactly.
That amateur. Yeah. Yeah. That was cool.
Amateur. And Brent Snedeker's caddy was Scott Vail, who is Canadian. You could obviously see on the 18th green a lot of emotion.
Meant a lot to him.
It meant a lot to him to win. What would that mean to you to win on home soil for you?
Yeah, I mean, that would mean a lot. Because it's interesting, because I feel like I'm at the point now when I go to tournaments, it's like when I go to majors, or like Scott said, you know, the Canadian Open is almost like a major. It's impossible to ignore when weeks are more financially beneficial, but I've got to the point now where I'm just trying to like win tournaments with Ryan. We're playing to like post a score and play the event. But I would be lying if I said it wouldn't mean a lot, and not to the same degree, but I obviously think a lot of people who are listening to this would have saw Brooke win last year and like how much that meant to her and the people in the stands, you know.
Sure.
No one would, not that I'm saying anyone would know or should know or care about me being Canadian if Ryan had won, but it would be something where, you know, it would feel good. It would feel better than winning other events of the same financial benefit, or, you know, like, I would say that if I could put money aside, it's either that or the U.S. Open. Like, it's that's a huge tournament for me. It's something that I look forward to very much every season. So, yeah, that'd be big. Hopefully we can get it done this year.
I mean, obviously that was big for, I mean, not only for Brooke, Brittany, too. I mean, for, you know, I've talked to her about that, and that was important to her.
Yeah.
Not only to see your sister win, but as a Canadian as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you take a lot of pride in that. Like, I'm proud of where I come from, and obviously I feel like there are a lot of good golfers in Canada coming up or who are already having success on the PGA Tour or even on the LPGA Tour. You know, yeah, Brooke's the mainstay, but you have Maud or AC Tange is coming up. That Jacqueline Lee, I think she's going to be
she's
a really good player.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
is it odd out there too? Because you end up with, with a bunch of Canadian caddies out there. And I mean, I know, you know, I'll go back to Ottawa again. You guys, there's a whack at you guys all hanging out in one house that week.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But that made it a little bit more fun?
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to have the, like, circles of friends you have. It's not, like, cutthroat or anything. Like, yeah, we're all competing against each other. But, like, the reality is you put in your prep work and, like, if you're good enough, no one else should have an impact on how well you do. Like, if I'm caddying for Ryan and, you know, what did I say? Window up there?
Yeah, window above.
Window above is caddying for whoever. Like, you know, like, it's... You go out and do your thing. Like, I've been fortunate enough to win, but I actually, last year at the Kia, two of my closest friends were in the last group, Unhi G and Lizette Salas. Funny enough, one of them, Unhi, made a hole in one to win a car with 5 holes left and then won the tournament for a car.
Free beer.
You know, like, we're all competing against each other out there, but we're all hoping that each other does well. Like, you, it's not like hockey where, like, you want to hit someone hard and maybe, like, they get out of the game or, you know, like, it's, you put in your work and no one wants to win dirty. You just want to win by being good.
You can't play defense.
Yeah.
So who do you think's the closest to Tanya Harding, one of,
is that the girl from gymnastics who got,
yeah, she's the one that
was ice skating who took out Nancy Kerrigan's knees.
You have a story.
I'm trying to think. First of all, I didn't know who that was. I'm just trying to think if there are stories of, like, crazy stuff.
Scott's
going on.
Journalistic professional.
Nah, I feel like the craziest thing that goes on is, like, maybe, like, a girl butts a girl in the omelet line in dining. She's like, "What? That was my bacon and peppers omelet." She's like, "Nah, it's mine.
Sounds vicious.
It's mine, mother.
Sounds vicious."
I think we'd be crazy not to bring up your girlfriend's actually on the LPGA.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's that? Being out there on the LPGA Tour, you're working. She's out there working.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever been paired up in the same grouping yet?
Not in competition. We've been dating for like just over a year now, and we play a lot of practice rounds together. Her and Ryan are pretty good friends. I would say that the biggest thing that I've noticed is that it's hard for me to. In my, like, because there are occasional times when you're caddying that, like, say, Ryan hits it a foot away for birdie and the other girls are 40 feet or, like, in a bunker. I'm going to have 2 or 3 minutes just to look at the, you know, birds and stuff go by. And then when there are leaderboards, I'm like, oh, my God, what's she doing? Oh, my God.
Checking,
like,
the board.
I was actually out to dinner tonight with my dad, and he asked me the same question. Like, is it harder or, you know, whatever, having our tour? It doesn't change the way I work. I'm not ever constantly thinking about it, but basically the only thing is whenever I see a leaderboard, I'm like freaking out. I'm like, I hope she's doing good. Because it's easy for me when I'm in the position to caddy for Ryan, and I've caddied for my girlfriend before, but when you can't control what's going on, it's hard.
Caddying for your girlfriend, how'd that go?
Well,
before we go ahead, why don't we give her a shout out? We haven't mentioned her name.
It's Lauren Kim.
Big year for her.
Yeah, going to be a big year. I think she was like 25th at Q School.
Is that right on the number, or is how many?
Well, they changed the format this year. It wasn't like a full card and like conditional card. They're just like, so she'll get into more events than last year. Last year, I think she played like 13.
Yeah,
maybe?
It's more of a ranking.
Yeah, so. It's a priority number. Yeah. What was the question?
I didn't ask it.
No, just saying, as far as you caddied for her.
Oh, yeah, caddied for her. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean.
So I caddied for her twice last year on off weeks of Ryan. And it was interesting. We got into a couple moments where I feel like boyfriend and caddy roles were confused. Where
you shouldn't make out with your caddy.
No, it wasn't like that. It was like, you know, I think the first week I caddied for her, it was on the Symetra Tour because it was an LPGA off week. And I think that, you know, that we have like 4 or 5 holes left and she's in like 5th place. We're like 4 or 5 behind the lead. We're not going to win, but, you know, like play it out, maybe finish 2nd. And she had a bad break in a hole, and like I felt it was time to be like, you know, let's get it in gear here. Let's leave that behind and like let's keep going forward. And she kind of took it that her boyfriend was upset she wasn't winning, and that was almost a year ago. So I'm going to caddy for her in a couple of events coming up here after we go to Thailand and Singapore. Ryan's got like 3 weeks off, and it'll be nice to spend time with her. So
what I want to know is, how do you negotiate the pay for that one?
Yeah, the negotiation,
if you win,
is that
zero. If we come top 10, zero.
I don't know.
No,
do you give her like a discount, or what?
Well,
do you...
it's a really good question, because I've like wondered how it worked. Obviously, Pernilla won the ANA this year, and like her husband, and before that, they had other long stints of working together, and that exists with more than one combo on tour. I mean, specifically on the Symmetra tour, like when I caddy for her, I'm just like, I'm just gonna come do it to spend time with
you.
Like,
do a favor. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Stay in a hotel. I don't want to pay expenses, but I'm not looking to make money.
Yeah.
He's just happy to stay in a hotel.
But yeah.
where
no murders are going on. Where no murders are going on. But yeah, so basically I'm just going, and I enjoy spending time with her, and you know, if she wins the event, I'll get taken care of.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. There you go. I mean, is that hard though? I mean, you know, obviously she's not always in the same events, and you got
to
travel. And I mean, I know you're going
to
spend some time
with her
now.
It's hard
with
her being somewhat conditional status, but I mean, the reality is I was never looking to date anyone while I was doing this, because it's so hard, because you're always moving city to city. So if I was going to be lucky enough to find someone I wanted to date, it was probably going to be a golfer. I always wanted to be taken very seriously, that I was there to work and not to, you know, be out there for a field trip. But I was just lucky enough that I got to meet her, and yeah, I feel really lucky about that.
Cool.
So obviously next year we're going to be looking out for Lauren out on the tour. Mm-hmm. We're obviously going to be watching you and Ryan out there and hoping both sets here win. Who else should we be looking out for out there next year? Who's a name that you're like, you know, not everybody knows this name, but watch out, she's coming.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about that someone that no one knows, well, I've got two. I mean, one that's going to make a massive impact is Jun Lee Six from Korea. That team event we were talking about that I worked Jenny Shin for this year, she was on Team Korea, and I think she won the Q Series this year, the Girls Q Series.
I believe so.
Yeah, at Pinehurst. But she had played at U.S. Open. She plays U.S. Opens. Anyways, she is going to be really good. I think probably, for all you guys betting out there, a lock for the Rookie of the Year. I can't bet on LPGA because that's not allowed, Pete Rose. But, you know, like I'm not saying I'm going to bet on it, but I'm saying anyone listening should bet on it. She's probably
money.
A lock for the Rookie of the Year. The only girl on the betting list with a 6 in her name. And like we touched on earlier, I think this Jacqueline Lee girl is going to be the real deal. I got introduced to her watching all the amateur stuff on TV this year. I think she made like the British Am semi or something, or
so
USM,
solid.
US Junior quarter semis. I've seen her at golf balls too, and she's going to be really, really good.
I played a whole one golf hole with her.
Yeah.
One. And I was
blown away. I'll take a birdie. She made birdie.
Solid impressed. No, she hit it short of the green on the par 3, put it in an impossible spot, and pitched it up to about 6 inches. Like it was nothing.
So she almost did make birdie.
Scott,
I still lost my money.
Scott
made birdie.
No.
Shot the course record first round.
No.
Not a big deal.
One hole.
Anyway, she is super impressive.
Yeah,
so
she's
going to
be
I
really
agree.
Good. I feel like, I mean, if you're talking about breakthrough people, listeners might not know that much about Angel Yin. I think we'll probably get a win this year. Because I think there was like 15 first-time winners last year.
Which is crazy when
like
you
insane.
Think about it. Yeah, because I mean, the level of talent is super deep, and obviously you've got players.
Yeah, I think Angel Yin wins one next year for sure. Six is going to, if you can bet on any site on Rookie of the Year on the LPGA, you might only get 2 or 3 to 1. But
writing it
it's
down
a lock.
Right now.
Yeah,
writing
it's a lock.
It down.
One name you didn't mention, and for the listeners, the way Ryan and I actually know each other is we used to work at Golf Town together.
Ryan DeVoe, not Ryan O'Toole.
Yeah. Just to, they just know each other from Instagram, from messages
just
that have gone unanswered.
There.
Yeah, okay. No, Ryan O'Toole.
I work strictly cash and got occasional chances on the floor to sell irons to 70-year-olds. Yeah. Couldn't get more than a
Ryan O'Toole would not come within 100 yards of me.
Come to the Canadian Open. You can get great access. She will.
That's true. We'll get to that. Don't worry. Yeah. But as I was mentioning, yeah, Ryan and I worked together at Golf Town.
Yes, we did.
In 2014, he had a front row seat to my 2014
Fitter. You knew we had to say this. Anyways,
hold
right.
on, Ryan.
Go
why,
on,
Ryan,
go on.
Let,
wait, not all of us know about it.
Yeah, not everybody knows. I don't talk about it much, but 2014, I was the Fitter of the Year for Ping. For the one of the best golf companies out there. Everyone knows him. It's not a big deal.
Not
don't
a
worry.
Big deal.
But I remember you had a great story about Lydia Ko and how you actually first introduced yourself to her. And you and I know each other because you and I worked at Golf Town together. Mm-hmm. Back in 2014, you had a front row seat to me becoming the 2014 Fitter of the Year for Ping.
I remember that.
Not a big deal. People heard about it.
That was pretty impressive. I was the Fitter of the Year for the coins in the cash register.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Putting dimes in like $10. I was the Fitter of the Year for that.
Did you get a certificate for that or anything?
No, they don't get a golf
fresh
pen.
Run it. Right. They recycled the cardboard for the rolls.
Solid.
So
like
they didn't have Fitter certificates.
But one of the best stories, that was the year you first kind of got out there. You were doing some events and you were out on the LPGA Tour and you met Lydia Ko.
I did.
And this has to be one of the funniest stories I remember ever hearing.
Oh, my God.
And it was just every time you'd come back from an event, you had a story. Why don't you tell listeners the first time you introduced yourself to her?
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, first of all, Lydia Ko couldn't be a nicer person and more polite and, like, a better ambassador for the game. And she is just her game and everything. She's such a sweetheart. So, I think before, after what you were talking about, I had only worked 3 or 4 events. And I had went to Australia. And everyone thinks on tour I have a weird accent because I'm Canadian. So sometimes it's confused with Australian. But anyway, she's from New Zealand. I go up to her after finishing a practice round. And we had met a couple days before in like a practice round or something. And I was like, you know, nice to meet you, Ryan. You know, Lydia, nice to meet you. She meets 100,000 people a day. She's just being polite. So 2 days later, I'm so starstruck. I'm like carrying big tour bags. And I'm in the LPGA in Australia. I see her walking down the hall. And she's like walking and I'm like, Lydia, how's it going? Nice to see you again. And she looks at me and like doesn't even know who I am. She's like, hello. Like, you know, whatever. I don't know if I'm British or New Zealand right now. But she's being so polite. And I was like, it's nice to see you again. You know, like she's like, it's nice to see. I was like, it's nice to see you again. And she's like, oh. And I was like, remember from Monday? And she was like, did you play in the Pro-Am? And I was like, oh, f-. Like, instantly, I'm just like, oh. I was like, and so I just go, yes. And she's like, okay, well, have fun this week. And I was like, okay.
I didn't know that she was also the Queen of England.
I don't know. My accents are off. I don't know. My accents are off.
What do they teach you in Napanee?
Yeah. How to stay alive.
There you go. Fair enough. Anything, I mean, obviously you're out there for a lot of time during the week. You have a lot of things that you have to do from a work side of it. What do you guys do to unwind? I mean, is there time to unwind?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the guys that I hang out with are still pretty avid golfers. Okay. We have the opportunity to play a lot of really good golf courses. I choose not to play a lot because I don't want... I used to be all right at golf, and now I'm very bad. So I don't want me not having fun playing golf to hinder my enjoyment of caddying. So I choose not to play. A lot of the guys play. I typically, because our domestic season starts usually the start of March. So that's kind of right when NHL playoffs are coming and, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs. So I watch a lot of hockey. I watch a lot of sports. I go to a lot of hockey games and MLB games, baseball games. But typically, as boring as it sounds, like I just kind of like to lay low and like go home and watch TV. A lot of my wake up calls are around 6 a.m. Typically, maybe 2 a week aren't. Just watching a lot of sports and going to games if I can.
How often are you playing?
Not very often. I mean, maybe 5 times a year. We get access to a lot of great courses and, you know, a lot of people, if they're into golf listening to this, are probably going to think I'm stupid, but like, there are really good courses that I've turned down. Like, we had the opportunity to play Pebble Beach. Where's that open
that Dustin missed the putt for eagle and then missed Chambers Bay.
Chambers Bay.
Yeah, we could. We got to play Chambers Bay. I chose not to go. I'm just so bad now compared to like how I kind of used to be, almost like shooting under par. Well, I was shooting.
I mean, what's your favorite course that you've that walked, we played or, at a walked tournament? Or played? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, we played the Women's British at Lytham and St. Anne's this year. That was pretty cool.
That's not
just
too shabby.
Just the Lynx Golf is a really sick environment. U.S. Opens are always great. We played this. I don't know how many U.S. listeners there are. This is just the name of the course. Sorry, but Trump Bedminster.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, U.S. Women's Open. That was a sick track. U.S. Opens are always really good. And the KPMG, the one that Brooke won at Sahali.
Yeah, yeah, Sahali's amazing.
Oh, the trees there. Have you played?
I've been there, but
been
I haven't
there to
played,
walk.
So, yeah.
So the trees are like
towering.
Towering.
It's like a cathedral.
Like, super like tight. Yeah. That was a really sick course.
Did that look intimidating if you had to like play that?
I was walking that course because I wasn't caddying for Ryan at that point. And it wouldn't matter who I was caddying for. I was walking that course and I was just like, these girls are going to shoot 100. I was like, I don't bet on sports, but I'm going to tell my friends to hammer the over on the winning score. But like, you know, it was crazy.
It
was really, really tight.
I mean, you've mentioned England, you've mentioned Scotland, you've mentioned California. I don't think listeners understand what the travel is actually like. How many miles would you say you actually traveled last year alone?
Yeah, well,
and if you follow this guy's Twitter account, all he does is just chirp airlines.
Oh,
over.
Yeah. Well, that's how you get, dude. I get like extra miles because, like, you know. So, like, the deal with like the travel is, I had advice from my buddy Dave. You know Dave, right? You met him, Stone.
Yeah.
Caddies for Ben Solomon on the PG
Tour.
Dave
Window Above Me.
Dave is not Window Above Me. Just so we can clarify.
This is Mark Stone's brother.
Yeah. Mark Stone's brother. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So Dave told me early on in my caddy career, he's like, if you're going to intend to be on it here for a while, like, you got to choose the same airline, fly them every time, you know, the benefits are like really good anyways. So they email me back. They send you like a summary or whatever every year. And I think I flew 100 with just this airline. There are occasional times I have to not fly with them. I flew 157,000 miles with them last year in the air.
How many countries was that?
Oh. I don't know off the top of my head.
Just start
maybe
listing them.
Canada, USA, China, Korea, Scotland, Australia. We were in New Zealand last year.
Bad for a kid from Napanee, eh?
Yeah, so we got around. so flew a lot of miles.
All right, Ryan, time to wrap this up.
Yeah, all right.
Where are we going to see you first this year?
We're starting... the second event in Australia, so the ISPS Honda Australian Open, play there, and then Thailand, Singapore, and then start back up in Phoenix in the domestic swing.
I love it. And most importantly for all our Canadian listeners, we will see Ryan and Ryan at the CP Women's Open at Magna Golf Club up in Aurora. Get your tickets. That is August 19th to 25th.
Mm-hmm.
You will see the T-Talk boys out there. We will be on the grounds. We will be watching you, cheering for you guys.
And we'll do a giveaway for tickets or something with you guys, maybe in like a month or something. Anyone who references this podcast, tags Scott in it. And we got some tickets to give away for that for sure. So only thing is, if you win a free ticket and Ryan O'Toole wins the tournament, you got to run on the green and pour beer on us.
I will accept that offer.
Excellent.
Ryan, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, this
on.
Was a lot of fun, and I'll be enjoying listening to you guys' podcast in the future, and hopefully I can be back on. I really enjoyed this.
Where can we follow your career?
If you want to follow Caddy, I guess on Twitter, RyanDez11, and hopefully I have some good content to share. Hopefully we get a win this year.
Instagram?
Same thing. Yeah.
And make sure you follow Ryan O'Toole out there as well,
big time.
His employer. And give Lauren Kim some love.
Yeah,
she's out there
grinding
it out.
Yeah, she's
going
to have a good year this year. We're fired up for her.
I love it.
Player.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great
on.
To be here. Thanks
appreciate
a lot, guys.
It.
Thanks, Ryan, for that wonderful interview. We were lucky to sit down with Ryan just a few weeks ago before he headed off to Australia, as I mentioned earlier. We wish him luck. I'm expecting big things out of Ryan this week. They're, as I mentioned, their first tournament of the year. So good luck to those two. Ryan Squared is I'm gonna pen that.
That's a great nickname.
Great nickname. It's going to be trending. I can guarantee it. Let's head back over to the United States. And we have
the guy that pushes the needle in golf, playing in his second tournament of the year. Tiger Woods is back. He's back in his own tournament, the Genesis Open at Riviera Country Club. Scotty, Tiger obviously struggles out at Riviera. He's never won at Riviera. What do you expect out of Tiger this week after taking quite a break here in between tournaments?
Well, one thing I always expect from him at Riviera is probably a missed cut, unfortunately. I mean, he missed it pretty big last year, 76-71, I believe. You know, I hope for better. You know, he's had some good results here, but his last time he had really good results were back in the 1990s. So that's 20 years ago. Is he playing well enough to get it around Riviera? It's going to come down to the driver. It really is. I mean, this is a golf course that we got monster trees, got Kikuyu grass, which you don't really want to play out of as far as the rough is concerned. And if Tiger can't put it in play with, you know, either a long iron or a three wood, it could be a tough chore.
And it's weird because he actually said, and I quote, I love the golf course. I love the layout. It fits my eyes and I play awful. And I thought it was pretty
funny.
It's
a great quote.
It is a great quote. He also went on to say that it's a great course for faders. He obviously fades the golf ball, hits it left to right. Do you actually believe that is a great course for faders? It's pretty straightforward in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at it and kind of go through in my mind, and I've only got to walk the property once, which is about 4 years ago, you know, certain holes that play really well for left to right, but I don't think it's really dominant that way. I really think it really rewards a player that can keep the ball in play and you know, be really creative. And obviously, Bubba Watson's had a lot of success there, and that creativity is really a big part of that. You're just going to end up with a lot of situations that are not really your standard ones on the PGA Tour because, you know, Riviera is just not your standard golf course. It's a classic old school golf course. So if he's got his height of creativity, yeah, he might do well, but he's certainly going to have to get the golf ball in play.
And obviously the greens out there are tiny, and which I actually think would play to his advantage. He's obviously one of the best iron players on tour still, if not the best all time. I just don't see how he goes wrong. I think this week he's got to break that streak of these missed cuts. I don't expect to see him pick up a win. We have a super stacked field out there this week. You're going to see Matt Kuchar. You're going to see Rory. You're going to see Phil back in the field. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm. You know, all the guys you expect to see out there for a big tournament, they're out there at Tiger's tournament this week. You mentioned off air before we got going today that the tournament is changing a little bit, going from an open tournament to an invitational. What does that actually mean, Scotty?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're basically modeling it after some of the various tournaments like the Memorial and Bay Hill, which were obviously honorees or tournaments that sort of honored Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. So the Genesis Open is really affiliated with Tiger Woods' foundation, and they really want to bring up the status of it. So they're going to change it over to an invitational event, 120 players rather than 144. They're going to ramp up the purse. I think they're going up to $9.3 million, which makes it one of the largest ones on tour. That's going up, I think, $1.9 million. And then as well, the winner will get a 3-year exemption on tour versus the 1-year exemption, which is obviously a really, really big hook for a lot of players.
That would be huge for a young lad out there trying to make a name for himself if he can get in that tournament and pick up a W. Let's switch it over to Tiger's best buddy, Sergio. Sergio's been in the news lately. What's been going on with Sergio? A couple breakdowns over in overseas there last couple weeks.
Yeah, obviously this is his first start after his incident overseas, where obviously he was disqualified in Saudi Arabia after his little
incident. I don't know why he was disqualified. He only just had a hissy fit in the bunker.
Yeah,
destroyed a couple greens.
Yeah, I mean, everybody obviously knows the story now as far as him you know, having a little bit of a fit. Now he's come over and apologized. He apologized on his Instagram page started.
So 2019.
It is 2019. But, you know, he obviously followed that up with, you know, a couple of interviews, you know, and explaining that. But really, I mean, he's talking about, you know, him being an emotional player, and he thinks that's one of his biggest strengths. But he also says it's one of his biggest flaws, which I think you'd agree with that.
I 100% agree with that. My problem at this point is, I've mentioned it many times, he's nearly 40. You can't be doing that anymore. He looks like one of my buddies out on a Sunday afternoon after, you know, 8 beers deep and thinking they're going to break 80 and they can't even break 90. It's embarrassing. To be honest with you, I think both tours should have, you know, set a precedent here and sent him with a nice hefty suspension. You're not, obviously we didn't see that happen. He apologized for it. I think it's time to move on, and we'll see if he has a freak out this week, because that would be a whole other story.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, he's certainly going to be under a lot of spotlight going forward. And really, we got to remember going back. I mean, this is what, 2019 now, but I mean, we're talking about, you know, incidents at Bethpage in 2002, 2007, spitting the cup at Doral, you know, kicking signs, throwing shoes. I mean, he's done just about everything in some of these events over the years. Like you say, at 39, needs to be a lot more mature. And even if he says he's learning from this and moving forward, well, he's going to have to actually prove that by doing it. And if he has one more incident, I think we're going to see a lot of fans sort of click him off.
Well, if there's any reason to tune in this weekend, we got a couple stories. We got Tiger back in the field. We got Phil back-to-back weeks. We got Sergio hopefully keeping everything together. And it should be a fun weekend out at the Genesis Open at Riviera. Everyone go check out that. Make sure you check out some of the LPGA this weekend. Cheer on our good Canadians in the field. Don't forget to cheer on Ryan O'Toole and Ryan DeVoe, our good buddy. And I think that's where we'll end it off for today. So thank you for listening to Tee Talk, the golf podcast brought to you by flagstick.com.